We're just moments away from 12:45 and the revelation of what the greatest sandwich of all time is. And now we play the commercial. I'm thinking, why didn't I say? I know it's got to be this. I know what it is. It's the BLT. It's got to be the bacon, lettuce, and tomato, because it's got bacon and lettuce and tomato. Is it the BLT? Yeah, it is.
12:45.
Is it the brown Schwager with mustard on white?
Stop. No.
Good sandwich. It's 12:12 on WGN. Tom Gimbel, if you could have one sandwich, what would it be? What is the best sandwich?
Italian beef, extra hot, extra wet.
Yeah.
You're from, this is Chicago, John. I prefer Mr. Beef on Orleans. I've been going there for 30 years. Like, it's the best.
Really? That one, wait, is there more than one Mr. Beef in Chicago?
Yeah, there's a Mr. Beef over on Harlem I've actually never gone to that a lot of people like, but I like the one on Orleans. It's the one, actually, it's the one on Orleans is the one that the new TV show The Bear is filmed at.
Yeah, have you watched that series yet?
I have. I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, it's crazy. The conceptually, it's crazy, but the show is good.
Pete sent me a video of a sandwich shop styled after Mr. Beef. The same drama. Everybody smoking. Everybody screaming. They're making peanut butter jelly sandwiches. No, chef! It's chef! Here's peanut butter! Where's the peanut butter? Let's talk about
That's
the jobs
funny.
Numbers on Friday. Were you surprised, and do we have a similar trend in Chicago?
Yeah, no, I was pleasantly surprised. I think everybody was. The estimates by the economists who aren't on the street was about 250,000. It came in at over 500,000, and that's a good thing. And there's a lot of talk a few days later that, you know, it's part-time jobs and this. There's always, you know, if the media and if the skeptics are in that kind of angle, they're going to always try to tear it down. But you add 500,000 jobs, that is a good thing.
Well, that's not what everybody told us, and not just because they were saying it's part-time jobs, but because it just means that the Fed has more work to do and we don't have inflation under control.
Well, we don't have inflation under control, but would we rather not have inflation under control and have less jobs being added? I mean, we're in a really weird situation, John, that we haven't ever seen before. And I'm a big believer in looking at history to try to predict the future and not repeating it. And however, we've never had a global pandemic with a stock market, with high inflation coming out of social unrest and all of these things intersecting at the same time, simultaneously with a global economy. And that's the biggest difference between now and the 70s and the 1930s is that this is a truly global economy. Small companies, $5 million, $10 million companies have offices or offshore things to South America or Eastern Europe or Asia, right? There's so many different facets of this economy that you can't compare it to other areas. So 2 quarters of negative GDP growth now isn't the same as it was 40 years ago. You know, that whole meme that's going on, John, where they say 1980 to 2020 is the same thing as 1980 to 1940, right? That craziness is real in everything. And we have to realize that right now, this is a good economy. Now, inflation concerns me, but this is a good economy that just added 500,000 jobs.
Can you boil that down to the Chicago area? Are you seeing a lot more aggressive hiring going on right now?
Well, it couldn't be more aggressive than it's been over the past 18 months. The question is it consistent? And the answer is yes. Is that while you have a company like Groupon that announces layoffs, you're always going to have companies that aren't doing so great that take advantage of a dip in the market, so to speak, to get cover for a layoff, right? No one wants to have a layoff. But Groupon doing a layoff now, it doesn't get negative publicity. It'll be gone in 2 days. Everyone will forget about it. But if they would have done it 6 months ago, it would have been, oh, my God, Groupon is doing layoffs because no one else is doing it. So you get cover to let go of some people, whether for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. And so in Chicago right now, it might not be the best for venture capital-backed, unprofitable companies, but we're still seeing a ton of hiring, salespeople hiring, marketing, human resources, technology. It all continues to be very, very strong.
I'll have what he's having. That's Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Next week, we'll talk again. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, that ties into Harry and Sally at the diner having a sandwich, by the way, John.
Hanging up now, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Beef brisket, couple of pickles, pick your bun. Not too much barbecue sauce, just a hello of barbecue sauce. Hello, just a little sauce. I mean, it's about the brisket. That's got to be the best sandwich ever. Maybe it's the brown swagger and mustard. The business of food at 1245. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. The senior editor at ChicagoWinnow.com is Jim Dahlke. I'm a little distracted today, Jim, as my colleague Steve Alexander said he's going to tell us what the greatest sandwich of all time is, or something like that.
Hey, I don't blame you. It's lunchtime. I'm ready to hear that as well.
Okay, you get one sandwich. What is it?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. You know what? Give me a good Southern fried chicken sandwich. Makes me think of home in North Carolina. I'm all on board.
Yeah, you know what? That's all the rage, too. You may be the leader out of the gate there. I don't know. Let's talk a little bit about, I want to ask you about where Chicago ranks in startups. But before we get to that, talk to me about Groupon and the turnaround strategy. Just a moment ago, Tom Gimbel was talking about these big tech companies that lay off a lot of people and sometimes use the economy as cover. Now, what's the story here from your perspective?
Yeah, you know, Groupon, of course, Chicago sort of startup darling from years ago, right? This is really the company that kind of kick-started in many ways Chicago's tech ecosystem in its modern era. They just announced this week that they are laying off 500 people, about 15% of their workforce. It comes after a second quarter net loss of more than $90 million, and the e-commerce company said that under the new strategy that it's implementing, it's aimed at reducing cost and improving its marketplace experience for long-term growth. So some very significant news here from Groupon. It follows news that we've seen from many tech companies over the last several months as they struggle to sort of make sense of the new normal here in the tech market. Mm-hmm. Many tech companies, both nationally and locally in Chicago, have gone through layoffs. We've seen layoffs happen at companies like Cameo in Chicago, for example, the Mom Project, another tech company in Chicago that's a bit of a job board and workplace matching platform for moms and women, also went through layoffs as well. So there are quite a bit of, sort of negative activity happening in the Chicago tech sector here, and certainly significant news here for Groupon.
I didn't use Groupon a lot when it first hit, although it was all the rage, but it's still a going concern, huh, Groupon?
Yeah, you know, their goal here is really kind of to boost the e-commerce marketplace. You know, a move that they had made really prior to the pandemic, just before the pandemic, was that they said that they were going to, in some ways, pivot to experiences. So on Groupon, you can do a lot of trip planning, you know, get discounts on different vacation packages. Obviously, that took a hit during the pandemic. So we'll have to kind of see how that becomes a piece of their business moving forward. But obviously, Groupon is going to be a smaller company than it was. It went through some layoffs during the early months of the pandemic as well. So we'll see. The company said it's going to cut its technology spending by $60 million annually, or about 30%. So this is certainly a right sizing here at Groupon, but they hope that these are going to be cuts now that can lead to some growth in the future.
One of your colleagues wrote about the ranking of top cities in the Midwest for startups. And I noticed that of the top 15, four of them are Big Ten University towns, Bloomington, Madison, Ann Arbor, and Columbus. Where is Chicago on the list?
Yeah, so Chicago's number one. It's not really a surprise. This is a ranking from a local VC firm, M25. They've been doing this list for the last several years, really interesting look at the Midwest and kind of how cities compare. And they use a couple of different factors. They look at startup activity, like the number of startups, number of exits, and then resources like funding and number of local investors in town, and also just sort of the cost of living and general business climate overall. And Chicago has ranked number one on this list every year they've put it together. Not a surprise, but you know, really the takeaway that they found is that 2021 was the year that Chicago took an even larger commanding lead in this rankings. As we have talked about over and over again, 2021 was really a remarkable year for Chicago's startup scene. Just really massive growth, 12 new companies worth $1 billion. No company, no city in the Midwest is even kind of close to touching that. So Chicago sort of really increasing its lead among its Midwest peers. But, you know, hey, what they say, you know, rising tide lifts all ships, right? So the Chicago's growth is certainly, you know, helping the rest of the Midwest overall, especially as new funds pop up here in Chicago and throughout the Midwest and fund more startups throughout the region. So even though we are in a tech downturn, even though the tech economy is certainly hurting right now, there is cash in a lot of VC firms' pocketbooks here. So we you know, certainly would expect to see more investment down the line as these VC firms continue to deploy capital.
Are we starting to get money that was otherwise going to San Francisco or New Jersey or wherever the other tech hubs are?
That's exactly right. And I think one example of that is Drive Capital. That's in a Columbus VC firm. It's launched from some guys who came from the Valley, went back to the Midwest to launch a fund. They've got a couple $1 billion of assets under management now, where they can deploy capital to really to Midwest startups. That's their focus. They have a focus on this region specifically, and that is an area of focus that just was not available 10 years ago. So yes, there's more capital here in the city, here in the region. There are more startups to invest in the region as well. So certainly considerable growth throughout the Midwest compared to where we were, say, 7, 8, 10 years ago.
What's Ulta Beauty? Ulta Beauty. That was Freudian. What's Ultra Beauty doing in the news today?
Yeah. The Illinois-based beauty products company has a $20 million venture capital fund that they officially announced. So this is going to be investing in a seed Series A tech companies that are working kind of in the beauty care space, both on the in the real world and in the virtual world. So think AR, VR, metaverse type companies as well, whereas sort of traditional beauty companies that are operating in the startup space. What's interesting to me is that it's, you know, certainly an interesting time, right, to launch a corporate venture capital fund as many startups are sort of feeling the effects of the tech downturn at the moment. Just this week, we learned that the Kraft Heinz's venture fund, Evolve Ventures, said it's going to primarily focus on backing other venture capital funds instead of making direct investments in other businesses. So, you know, time will tell if this is a perfect time for Ulta Beauty to launch a venture fund or if the market is going to be a little tricky for them. But definitely interesting to see a local, you know, traditional business get into the venture capital space.
Jim Dahlke, ChicagoInno.com, senior editor there. Nice to talk to you, Jim. We'll do it next week.
Thanks, John.
Elliot Richardson is the president of the Small Business Advocacy Council. Let's talk about, boy, this is a novel idea, or maybe it's not, Elliot. Welcome to WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great.
You are interested in the idea of providing incentives to businesses to hire formerly incarcerated people, right?
That is correct. Right now, John, you know, the small business community is having a terribly, terribly difficult time trying to find qualified employees. And this labor shortage is impacting the operations of small businesses across the state. At the same time, you have a large number of formerly incarcerated individuals who actually receive skills while they're incarcerated, but come out and are having a very tough time getting a job because of a lack of on-the-job training. So we're pushing for legislation, and we have a ton of partners on this. House Bill 3215, which would provide wage subsidies to businesses that hire formerly incarcerated individuals, and for small businesses, $2,500 grants to get formerly incarcerated folks into the workforce. And John, that's also going to do really significant things in terms of improving public safety, while saving the state money on reincarceration costs, while generating revenue for Illinois. So it's like a win. And we would love to see this innovative legislation move forward.
Is the hesitancy of businesses because these people don't have skills or because they don't trust them?
You know, I think the hesitancy is more that you've really got to teach and bring opportunities to people who are formerly incarcerated. So it's not just learning the skill, but it's also, you know, learning how to operate in a business setting. So while there may be some business owners who may be reticent to bring on a formerly incarcerated individual because of concerns about their past, at the same time, if we provided funds to help incentivize, resources to help incentivize businesses to provide this training to this whole new group of people that we could bring into the workforce. Right now, small business owners need employees. So I think from talking to the small business community, there would be a great desire to try to work to bring returning citizens into the workforce. And when you talk to business owners who have hired people who have been formerly incarcerated, they sing their praises. They talk about the fact that these formerly incarcerated folks are loyal employees, they're dedicated employees, and this just looks to be a very innovative way to supplement the workforce while providing opportunities to people who need it.
You're talking about incentives for these businesses to do that. Is this federal legislation or state legislation you're talking about?
John, this is state legislation. So on a state level, HB House Bill 3215 has been filed. It got out of the Judiciary Committee in the House. Chairman Slaughter and Chairwoman Ammons have been wonderful champions for this legislation. We're working with small businesses. We're working with the Center for Workforce Justice. We're talking to law enforcement about this. So basically, we're bringing together all of these different groups to advocate for this, and we can move it this fall in the state. And that's an urgent issue for small businesses, bringing more people into the workforce, and we want to get it done in the fall.
What kind of jobs do you imagine? What are we talking about here?
I think it could be manufacturing, for sure. It could be it could be professional services, right? So it could be that as well. It could be working at a restaurant. I mean, if you walk around and you ask 9 out of 10 businesses, are you having trouble hiring, John? You know 9 are going to raise their hand. Right. I mean, and this is in disadvantaged communities. This is in the suburbs. This is in rural communities.
These prospective employees, these people previously incarcerated, do they know how to apply for a job? Do they understand the value they represent?
Absolutely. And that is the beauty of this program. The wage subsidy program was actually developed by formerly incarcerated individuals. They said, look, we appreciate all the job training we get, and that's important. But what we need is we need a way to connect with business owners so that they know that we're out there, that they can be hired. And yeah, I mean, they're very excited about this. They're excited about the opportunities. And this program, this legislation would create that link between the business community and returning citizens so that small businesses know that this entire group of people is out and ready to be employed.
Do you think this would tap down the rate of recidivism, too?
Tremendously. The last statistic I saw is that with a good job, recidivism rates drop by 62%, right? And with areas in Chicago that are struggling with public safety being on the front page of the newspaper, frequently, this is something that could meaningfully impact public safety while also fostering economic growth.
Okay, everybody, call your local House representative. First, figure out who that is, and then reach out to them. It's House Bill 3215. 3215. Elliot Richardson is the president of the Small Business Advocacy Council. We're talking about Safer Communities and Small Business Act, House Bill 3215. Check in with us again, Elliot. Let's stay in touch on this and either continue to promote it or follow it as it makes its way through, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on, John.
The Wintrust Business Lunch continues. We've got more business food with Steve Grzant.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. We're learning more about the layoffs at Chicago-based Groupon. The company says most of the nearly 500 job cuts will be in technology, North American sales, and the merchandise business in Australia. The layoffs represent about 15% of the company's staff in a move to cut $150 million in annual costs. Once the cuts are completed later this year, Groupon will have about 800 jobs left in Illinois, which is half the number it employed 2 years ago. Before the layoffs, Groupon had about 3,400 employees worldwide. More downtown Chicago companies are trying to shed office space. Cranes reports at least 3 publicly traded companies are trying to unload nearly 190,000 square feet, including several spaces built in just the past year. Software company CSG International has listed its more than 51,000 square foot office at 1 North Dearborn. Huron Consulting Group, freight logistics company US Express, cryptocurrency exchange Gemini, and recruitment service Next College Student Athlete have also listed space. Companies need less office space as more employees are working remotely in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time, here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, let's begin by talking about the world's best sandwich. But before that, I am happy to tell you that we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. This is National Sandwich Month, and many people believe the world's best sandwich is the BLT.
Ooh, me too.
John Gustet, it's peak season for the BLT, and I finally had my first one of the season Sunday after picking up lettuce and tomatoes and bread at the farmer's market and bacon at the store, and on lightly toasted sourdough with just a hint of mayo. Oh, my.
Oh, bacon.
I bet the Illinois pork producers second that emotion. But there is another sandwich they like, too, the pork chop sandwich. And it's hard to believe it's here already, but Friday Night Lights will be back at the high school football fields of Illinois in about 3 weeks. And for a second year, the contest begins to find the state's best concession stand pork chop. The Illinois High School Association and Illinois' pork producers are sponsoring the contest. Gotta tell you, though, the story of last year's champion is going to be hard to beat. Not only did judges decide that Normal Community High School had the best-tasting pork chop sandwich of the 79 schools entered, there was perhaps a secret weapon, the A-Train. That's what they called Adam Denzer when he played football for Normal Community.
He just ran through the line like a train. They called him A-Train.
That's Marty Pickett, class of 78. He's the volunteer pork chop chef at home games. After graduation, Adam raised pigs about 15 miles outside town and drove the team buses for Normal Community's athletic teams.
He was really involved with the kids. The kids loved him.
But
Adam got killed in a farming accident on his farm.
At every home game, there is a bright orange reminder of Adam. His widow, Marie, donated the money for the A-Train concession trailer, and you can't miss it.
Park it right on the sidewalk where people have to go by us to get into the football stadium.
High schools can enter this year's Pork and Pigskin Championship beginning August 15th at IHSA.org, where you can also go if you want to be a guest judge. Good luck. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Boy, more sandwich talk after the news. John, leftover meatloaf sandwich is the best. Mm-hmm. And here I picked the BLT, but now I'm thinking these are all just killing me, Smalls, here at 1251. Stephen Thayer joins us now, the co-founder of a company called Next Name. Visit nextname.io. Steve, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Pretty good. We have talked a lot on this show and other shows about name, image, and likeness, how it's opening up revenue opportunities for current and past college athletes. How are you involved in that space?
So I'm a University of Illinois alumni, and as a loyal alumni, we were trying to figure out how to support our players. The typical NIL deal is hiring a student athlete to endorse your business. You know, which is kind of clunky. It's entering into a contract, having him, you know, paying him money to show up at a tailgate or show up in, you know, an advertisement for your business. And we put our heads together with my son and I and thought it's got to be an easier way to support the players and their NIL efforts. We came up with these NFTs, which are non-fungible tokens, things that reside on the blockchain, which is essentially a digital file of the name, image, and likeness of a player. So now you can just go to our website and buy essentially a digital trading card for a player, and the money essentially goes to the player to support that player. Or you can buy a team token, and the money that you buy the team token with is essentially divided among the players who join the platform. So we've come up with what we think is a super easy way to support the players by buying their name, image, and likeness. And I think the schools that get behind, the fans that get behind their players and buy their tokens and support their teams will experience a recruiting benefit because those programs will be supporting athletes, and more athletes will want to come to the programs where, you know, you're supporting the athletes. So we're launching with U of I, and the site just went live. The team tokens are up. The player tokens are dropping every day, and it's an exciting time for Illinois athletes.
So say you get the University of Illinois' participation. Do you need to sort of sell this idea to the schools or to the athletes, or can you offer an NFT of them irrespective of their endorsement, if you will?
No, you always need their permission and the legal right to use somebody else's name, image, and likeness. So we've entered into contracts with all the players that have signed up, and we've also entered into a contract with U of I. So a portion of the proceeds of every token go to U of I because we're using their name, image, and logos and trademarks, and a portion goes to the player because we're using their name, image, and likeness.
I suppose then your wish list is Notre Dame, Michigan, Alabama, Duke. Who are you scouting next?
Yeah, you know, you take the top 30 programs and, you know, you put those on the list, and then you look at the state laws in those states, because there are some states that pass laws in a rush to get ahead of the NIL rules and said, you know, we're going to pass a law to encourage NIL, but they included a provision that essentially says the university can't help or support in those efforts. Why they put it in there, I don't know. Illinois did the same thing. They quickly realized that was a mistake. They quickly amended their rule about a month ago so that the U of I can now participate in helping players line up NIL deals. But if you look at the states where they still have that law, you know, you basically put them on the bottom of the list because they're at a competitive disadvantage because they can't help their kids. If they can't help their kids, we can't help their kids.
So does the price of the NFT depend on the popularity of the athlete?
Well, we're not varying the price. We kind of treat all people equal, and we're selling tokens for essentially $25 for a player token, whether you're a women's volleyball player or a men's football player. We think people will step up and support their players either way.
Do you think this is an investment? Will that appreciate? Could I sell it down the road?
It's certainly possible, and you never know, right? You could buy a player his freshman year, and that rookie card, so to speak, could go on to become a lot of money, worth a lot of money, and you could sell it on an open marketplace down the road. We're not pushing that and promoting that. We're not a trading card game that you try to buy low, sell high. Down the road, we're trying to be a support program for the players and the athletes. So we want most fans to think of it as a donation to support their team and their players. And gosh, if it's worth something, that's great. If you want to, take it and put it on your wall in a digital mural, you can, take the images that you've bought and the NFTs you've bought and display them on your wall, just like you put the jersey, the signed autographed jersey or the signed football in the case. You'll just do that digitally now.
One last thing. So $25, well, that's not really going to support a student athlete that much. Is that all the student athlete gets? Would it be one NFT issued per player?
No, it's 5,000 to start with. And imagine there's 5,000 people in a football stadium who all buy an NFT of that player for $25. It starts to add up pretty quick.
Okay, how do I do this?
So jump online and take a look at the players and the teams you want to support. You have to log in and create a digital wallet. That's the, the mystery to most people is, what is a digital wallet? What is an NFT? Doesn't really matter. You log in and it'll give you a digital wallet, and then you provide a credit card and buy the NFTs that you want. Now you've got a digital wallet loaded with your NFTs.
Nextname.io. Nextname.io is where you go. Steve, fascinating. You're on the cutting edge here. Good luck. Let's catch up again, see how things are going.
Great. Thanks for letting me be participating.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we're glad you're on board.